It's time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Jay Barrett, and this morning we're talking about Project Homeless Connect, which is coming up 23rd, it turns out. And I have a couple of guests in the studio. Let me introduce Maggie Winston. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
And Ashley Blatchford. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
No, not too bad. Are you related to Edgar?
Yes, he is my husband's uncle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's famous in journalism circles. Maggie, you're a systems advocate and transition specialist with the Soldotna Independent Living Center. First, maybe you can tell us what that is and your connection with the Project Homeless Connect.
Sure. So I'm an employee with the Independent Living Center. We have four offices on the Kenai Peninsula: Seward, Homer, Kodiak, and one here in the Central Peninsula. And what I do is advocate for the civil rights of individuals with disabilities. And I also help in transitions, such as like nursing facility transitions, assisted living home transitions, and also students with disabilities that are in transition from high school into adult and independent living.
Oh, are there a lot? I mean, are you busy?
I do okay. Sure. Yeah. Yes.
We have another guest who has just sat down. Please grab a microphone did I talk to you yesterday? No?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Kelly Bartlemy, and I'm the IL Advocate at Independent Living Center.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks for joining us.
Certainly.
Let's move this microphone a little closer to you. Yeah, within about a hand's width or so. We're going around and introducing ourselves here. You've taken Ashley's spot, so please, maybe you could say a little bit about your connection with Project Homeless Connect.
My connection is I have been working with the Project Homeless Connect through the Independent Living Center for 2 years now. This will be my third event, and I'm there as an independent living advocate and one of the vendors, so folks that are looking for information on how to maybe get their Social Security started, I'm there for them to come and I can give them the information on that, that like SSDI, and taxi vouchers and the different programs that we have at the Independent Living Center.
Oh, terrific. And then Ashley Blatchford of the Lee Shore Center, maybe you could tell us what you do in your connection with this project.
So I am the Education and Training Assistant, which is a very long title, which indicates that I do things like get to speak to the public, work with our volunteers, do outreach, work on our Facebook and our website. So that kind of communicating with the public. So I'm very happy to be here. The Lee Shore Center, if you're not familiar, is our local emergency shelter for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. We have a 32-bed facility. So we are considered emergency housing for that, and that is our connection with Project Homeless Connect, is that a percentage of these individuals have been victims and or fleeing domestic violence.
Oh, of course. This is the, is it the 8th Project Homeless Connect coming up next week?
That's yes. Correct.
I understand is it a nationwide deal that you folks are a part of or a part of here? How did it come about here on the Kenai Peninsula?
It is national, and everybody has, it's all done on the exact same date across the country.
Oh, okay, right. It's national, that's where they get a count, right? A count of the homeless?
Correct.
Right. I was talking with, last year when I was there, I spoke with, I don't know, somebody who told me that it was, how do you keep count of these things in a population of people who don't have an address, or perhaps by definition don't have an address?
And so that's sort of the tricky thing that the continuum of care that the team that we're part of is tasked with, is getting this accurate count. And so we are now under these new HUD regulations saying that we have to find a more accurate data entry. We need to find some better way to make the data consistent across the whole state, so that individuals that like experience homelessness in Fairbanks, when they come to Kenai, we can find some of their data from other places that they've been, like if they've been to a shelter in Anchorage, or that if there's someone that needed emergency housing in, let's say, Kotzebue, that if they move, that we have consistent data. And so that consistent data is used to apply for HUD funding. So you can see how it would make it very important that we find some way to consistently enter and track individuals.
Wow. Do you find that some Alaskans are not interested in being tracked? I mean, I kind of get that impression from a lot of Alaskans.
Sure.
Being one, you know, the Alaskan libertarian streak, I guess.
Sure. And personally, not being the data entry person, I guess, don't have any testimonial on that. But I can imagine, yes.
Yeah. Well, and the data they collect is not very invasive. Essentially, what they're looking for is a name, and I believe it's the last four digits of the Social Security number. That's pretty much all that they need for traditional data entry. On our side, we don't collect that. We have federal mandates that preclude that for safety reasons. So we work with partner agencies that work with homeless populations, like the Food Bank, Love Inc., Independent Living Center, the Lee Shore Center. Anyone who is engaged with that vulnerable population has a form that they can fill out for that day to help collect that data, in addition to everyone who attends Project Homeless Connect.
Wow. Well, how many folks experiencing homelessness do we have here? I know when I went to the event last year, it was very crowded, and I was there for over an hour, and it was full.
We had 119 people show up to the event itself. When we asked them about their household population, that number goes up to 320. So we assisted essentially 320 people facing homelessness last year for our event.
Wow. What's the definition of homeless? It's not just not having a home, right? I mean, there are different ways to describe somebody who's at risk for this.
Yes, there are several dimensions that HUD uses. I believe they're being updated. So one, if they are something like couch surfing, essentially if you don't have a permanent, safe, habitable place. So living in a trailer without running water or heat is not considered a habitable facility. So that is considered you're still homeless. Couch surfing, living in an emergency or transition center, incarceration or institutionalization is also considered homelessness because that's not permanent housing. So all those kinds of factors are things that we're looking for. And anyone who's at risk for homelessness, because we know that some people are one missed paycheck away from losing their ability to rent or pay their bills.
You know, I spent the last 12 years in Kodiak, and they have the Brother Francis shelter there. It used to be connected to the one in Anchorage, but they went independent a number of years ago. And one of their main projects or missions is to keep people in the homes they're already in. They spend a lot of money keeping people from becoming homeless.
Yes, and Love Inc. is the agency in this area that is the primary go-to for those kinds of services. They are usually the first line for someone who needs a little bit of assistance to stay in their home.
Oh, wow.
And they are also looking at starting a Homeless Connect next year in Kodiak. Brother Francis and Independent Living Center both have individuals coming over for this event to see how it's run, and hopefully they can get one started up for next year.
Oh, that would be terrific, actually. Kodiak has a very transient homeless population. So there's, you know, they have the bunch where they're trying to keep them in their homes, their super expensive apartments or whatever. But then, there's a lot of fishermen, cannery workers and stuff going in and out.
We have that same issue here. It's interesting, the nationwide count is in January, but I imagine if we did this in June, the numbers would be very much more significant because of the population that comes down to fish work in the canneries.
Well, I never thought. So would they have to have been homeless before and then come down here to work in the canneries to be counted as homeless here?
So a lot of the folks that come and work at the canneries are still homeless. Like, if they're either being provided housing by the cannery or they pitch tents, that is fairly common. So the fact that if someone, they would have to stay here, essentially. They have to be here for this count to be counted. So everybody that we work with in the summer months who doesn't stay here, we don't get to count, even though we provide them services in that summertime.
Oh, wow. Wow. That must... like you're saying, the HUD, was it HUD requirements?
The coordinated entry requirements.
Yeah. This revelation that we can't count the people in the summer probably puts a big bite in the budget that's not being taken up by being officially counted, right?
Sure.
And that coordinated entry will help mitigate that problem, because then we'll be able to have more consistent data, not just at this one day of the year.
Ah, okay. Has there been any change in our rate of homelessness in on the Kenai Peninsula here in the last X amount of time?
If you look at the data, there has been about like a 15 to 30% increase every year of participants in Project Homeless Connect. At our event. So I think, I'm no statistician, but I think that connotes some increase, yes.
Right, and 68% of the participants last year were first-time participants. So these are not necessarily people coming back year after year. These are new people needing help.
Do you think there are people out there who could use help but didn't show up?
Oh, yes, of always.
Course, yeah. Yeah. Oh. So do you have an estimate of the larger number that counts them?
We don't at this point. That's part of that data collection process.
Ah, okay. Wow. How did homelessness become an issue of that needed responding to here in the Central Peninsula? Was it the most recent economic downturn? Was it just chronic homelessness that became more noticeable? I've been gone the last 12 years, so I really couldn't say. Anyone?
I suspect that homelessness has always been an issue. I imagine that the recent economic events have not helped the situation. We've lost a significant amount of jobs in this area over the last probably 10 years. So it's definitely a contributing factor. But it is also becoming more noticeable, and people are, I think, becoming more adept at realizing that this is not what we want for our community and our community members, and stepping in and taking that stand. The continuum of care on the Central Peninsula has been around for more than 20 years. So they have been working on the homelessness problem at least that long.
Tell me more about the continuum of care.
So that is essentially the umbrella coalition that has been working on the homelessness issue. Anyone who receives HUD funding has to be a participant. And then we also want to bring to the table anyone who is working with that vulnerable population so that we can work with these individuals and be the most effective with our resources and get them the most help in the most timely manner possible. And that takes a village, essentially, right? We can't do this alone. I can't do it alone in my agency. Independent Living Center can't do it alone in their agency. Loving can't do it alone. We have to work together, and we find that's much more effective and results in better long-term results for the people we're working with.
Ah.
We make up the web, essentially, of care, the continuum. So the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness would be the main center in Anchorage, and they have a board of 15 people. And so then each individual community will have their own continuum of care that's made up of these partner agencies like ILC and like Love Inc. and like Leashore Center.
Ah, okay. I was on your guys' Facebook page here earlier, and I found the needs of a homeless person through a continuum of care. That sounds like practical advice, not your organization, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Are there attempts to wean people from homelessness? I don't know if that's the right word, wean. Find them homes, I guess. Give them the skills to succeed in that area of their lives?
Absolutely. The mission of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness is simply to end homelessness. That's the goal.
Oh, okay.
We want to see no one without a permanent home.
And what I do at the Independent Living Center, I work with a lot of folks that are homeless. They come in. We have the income-based list of housing, kind of what the biggest barrier is that we don't have enough housing. So the waiting lists can be quite a while to get into one of the HUD apartments, which are 30% of your income based housing. And then like with Alaska housing, you're looking at 18 months. So we do work and try to give them the avenues in order to get on those waiting lists. However, there is a waiting list, and that's where the biggest barrier is with a lot of folks.
Wow.
And in our office, we are a little bit tasked because we are only able to provide services to individuals that experience a disability. So that's why we work closely with Love Inc. and with Lee Shore, and to be able to get individuals access to this housing that's so minimal sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Let me give out the phone number. Are you folks interested in taking phone calls if people have them?
Absolutely.
Sure. Our phone number is 283-8414. I'm talking with Maggie Winston, Ashley Blatchford, and Kelly, whose last name I didn't catch when she walked in.
Bartlemy.
Can you spell that?
B-A-R-T-E-L-M-A-Y.
M-A-Y. Bartlemy. I'm glad you're here. Once again, the number 283-8414, in case I didn't mention that enough. The homeless situation here seems to be different than you would see in, like Kodiak, where, you know, there's a lot of guys get kicked out of the Brother Francis shelter at 8 in the morning and they go sit in the park or the library or what have you. Or in Anchorage, you know, in Spinard or 4th Avenue or something. It seems completely different here. It seems like homelessness is almost invisible here.
We have a lot of camps.
Oh.
For lack of a better word, they've got them all over the Kenai and Soldotna area, out in the wooded areas, out Funny River Road, out this way. And so they're not out there on the streets because we don't have that big downtown
right.
area for them to be out at. Because every now and again, you'll see someone at Fred Meyer's that has their homeless sign. But for the most part, I think they're kind of just off in the woods, and a lot of them take care of each other. I know last year we had individuals that came through the Project Homeless Connect and asked, well, can I take three of these because I got three friends at camp that couldn't get in today with me. So they're their own community almost.
Wow.
I suspect that it's not much different, that it just looks different.
Right.
Ah. Right. I mean, if you're homeless, you're homeless.
Sure.
It doesn't matter if you're living in the inner city or, you know, in the bushes across the street here. Where I think actually some are. Actually down here on this stretch on the water side, on the bluff side. I should actually go and meet them and interview them.
Yeah.
That might be a good idea.
I kind of dress like I'm homeless anyway.
That's why you can't tell, because we all dress like this. It's a proper Alaskan attire to make sure that you're warm.
Ah, very good.
It's been a really eye-opening experience for me personally, too, just working with this, with the continuum of care and with this event, really seeing the individuals and knowing the stats and understanding, because it's like you said, it doesn't look like there's this huge problem, but it's there. It exists.
Mm-hmm. We often hear, you know, during election season, politicians, a lot of places they rail about immigrants causing crime. Some places I've heard politicians rail against what they would call the what's the word I'm looking for? I can't remember. But like, you know, people who would accost you in public. What is that called? That kind of homelessness, and they blame crime on the homeless. Do we find that that's the incidence is any higher, or is that not even in your bailiwick?
I'm not sure we have stats or data on that.
Yeah, that's not really our primary concern. I can say that it is not uncommon for the folks coming in to Project Homeless Connect to have chronic health issues, mental health issues, disabilities. We do find and addiction issues. So those are avenues that we are working with our partners to address, because that can be a primary cause of homelessness. Someone who lost everything because they couldn't pay their medical bills, or because they got addicted to a substance, or, you know, have mental health issues and couldn't maintain what we'd consider to be a stable lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up in the woods.
Right. I was kind of thinking about concern over them being further marginalized by baseless accusations of being a bigger problem than they are.
It's very possible because, oh, they're criminals, lock them up, is a very simple solution that isn't effective nor appropriate to better our community. But it sounds really catchy and it sounds like it'll just solve all the issues.
Right.
Fear-mongering works to change people's minds sometimes, but it really doesn't affect the stats or the facts.
Right. How many folks a day do y'all work with who are homeless in one form or another?
Mine varies. I mean, I can have days and days where nobody calls it and nobody is looking for any type of assistance. And then I have days that I can't turn around without having someone that is looking for some kind of assistance from us.
Wow.
Well, and since Lee Shore is an emergency shelter by definition, mm-hmm. most of the people that we work with are experiencing homelessness as a result of domestic violence or sexual assault. We do get people that aren't ready to leave home yet or are able to make arrangements to get someplace else safe that don't have to come into shelter, and we do work with them, but primarily the folks that we're working with are the ones that don't have any other kind of support system in place and they need safety. So for the Lee Shore Center, pretty much everyone.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a journalist, my job is to turn lingo or jargon into, you know, plain English. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I was, I would get, not upset, but I would point out to my fellow journalists that using the phrase experiencing homelessness is sort of soft and it's not as direct as they are homeless. But, you know, when you were just talking about people who are forced from their homes because of violence, they're not the homeless that, you know, a lot of people think of, but they are experiencing homelessness. Homelessness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They probably have a perfectly fine house, but it's not a safe place to be.
You've changed my mind about that phrase. Right here and right now. That's great.
Oh, good. I'm going to ask for a bonus when I get back.
It's another part of also what we call person-first language. And so we talk about individuals that experience a disability or individuals that experience autism. And it's sort of another way to make you a person first instead of what you're experiencing or maybe just a part of your life that you wouldn't choose to have put before your humanity.
Oh. No, I get that.
Mm-hmm. And it's like the youth that are out there, the minors that whose parents were one paycheck away and got laid off. They're experiencing homelessness. They didn't choose that lifestyle. They're
mm-hmm.
they're helpless in that situation. They're children, and that's where they're at now.
Right, right. You know, we're going to take a little break. I'm going to give out the phone number again here, but when we come back, I have some questions about you know, the different living situations people have. You're talking about camps, and I actually lived in my car for one summer. I don't know if that counts, mm-hmm. but...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I was working, and I did it on purpose. I was parked in my friend's driveway. It wasn't out in the boonies. But let me ask you about different kinds of homelessness and what's being done after a quick break. Let me give the phone number again, 283-8414, if you'd like to give us a call. We're talking about Project Homeless Connect, which is coming up a week from today, 9 to 3 at the Soldotna Sports Center, Multipurpose Center. It's in the conference room area, and it'll be the eighth annual one. Oh, yeah.
So 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks?
The 23rd. Today's only the 9th.
Oh, today is the 9th. Yes. Okay, so 2 weeks from today. 23rd. We will be right back.
Thank you.
It's 10:28, and you're listening to Public Radio KDLL. I'm your host, Jay Barrett. We have three guests in here talking about Project Homeless Connect coming up in 2 weeks. That is the 23rd of January. It's the 8th annual. It's going to be down at the Soldotna Regional Complex. What do they call that place?
The Sports Center.
It's still the Sports Center?
Oh,
okay. Good. That's at least the third name they've had in that place.
But. I mean, maybe that's not the official name, but I think everybody
that's what everybody knows it as.
Yes.
Yeah. This event, there's free rides, right? I mean, you think about the homeless, and they're not all camped around the sports center. But so there's a lot of ways for people to take advantage of this.
That's right. Alaska Cab is sponsoring free rides for individuals. There's drop-off and pickup points. Or individuals can call.
Oh, that's terrific. What are some of the events, some of the things actually at the event? What do we call it? Do we call it an event?
An event,
an event.
We have around nearing 40 vendors that are confirmed right now. So it's a large, large event. Individuals come in and they go through a sort of like an intake process. And then they're... helped or chaperoned through the different vendors that can be the best service to each individual. So we've got several volunteers that will take individuals, ask them about their main needs, and then direct them to the area that they need to go. And so like if it's an individual is experiencing a disability, then they'll send them over to Kelly at the ILC booth. Or if individuals need help with Social Security, they can send them to a Social Security booth. Oh, which is Kelly again. Ashley, maybe you could help me with some of the other vendors that we have confirmed.
We have lunch. We have a food pantry, care for animals, and food for animals and things like that will also be there. There will be a vet there, I understand, this year to check out, because quite often the folks that are out there experiencing homelessness, they've got dogs. My understanding is that last year we had a cat also.
Wow.
1 year we had a cat.
A very large cat.
He was lovely, but mm-hmm. everyone wanted to pet him, and he was a cat.
Haircuts as well.
I was going to say, there were a couple of stylists there last mm-hmm. year. Actually, the best picture I took there was of a fella getting his hair cut by the young lady.
Massages, feet check. I believe we're going to have the fire department. They do blood pressure checks, last I heard. That was something we were looking at. I'm not sure if that came through or not. Mm-hmm. Serenity House will be there. Freedom House is there. The hospital, PCHS.
Kenai Public Health will be there with Change for the Kenai. Getting people trained on Narcan or Naloxone, if you are familiar with that. So since there is a high correlation with homelessness and drug use, we want to make sure that those people, don't overdose, and that is a state, that's a state epidemic that is funded through Project Hope, and they'll be giving out Narcan kits to those who are interested in taking that training.
Those are definitely needed.
And a needle exchange as well.
Yes, mm-hmm. they're going to be from yes. Homer this year.
From Homer, right. Yeah. I interviewed them last year and at the gig. What about flu shots? Last year it was icy cold, and I thought, flu shots would be a good thing this time of year. No?
I don't think so.
We did that a few years ago. I believe regulations have changed that make it more prohibitive for individuals to do so. So unfortunately not. That is something that we'd love to be able to bring back in the future if rules ever allow it.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. Last year I was impressed by the guides or the docents or that you were mentioning, Maggie, because, I had one take me around, as a journalist, I was going to go around. And, I had her, treat me as if I was a client, I guess. It was amazing. The gentle care, it was like true caring, where do you get these people who are signing up for this?
I think it's just part of the deal. It's that we don't want individuals to feel judged, or we want them to feel cared for and to specifically address the needs of our community, which is what's so amazing about this event in my mind, is that it's completely community sponsored and it directly affects individuals within our community. So I think that in that, we need to have individuals of our community helping individuals of our community in a kind and caring way that shows no judgment.
I think you succeed.
Yeah, and they're just individuals that volunteer because they have the heart to do so. They want to help. They want to be there and not be judging. They just want to be there to help out.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys still in need of anything for this event in 2 weeks? I saw there was a list online of donations.
Yeah, we do. The Independent Living Center puts together what we call comfort kits. And it's toothbrushes and toiletries and women hygiene, lotions, all kinds of things like that. Trail bars, beef jerky, things like that we can put into a gallon bag. And so any of those items are still always needed so that we can get those. We try to have at least 200 of those put together mm-hmm. at the beginning of the event so that we can make sure that everybody, when they leave, receives a comfort kit. The small first aid kits are wonderful to put in one of those. Hand warmers are something that we get that I haven't received yet this year. So the hand warmers are wonderful, foot warmers, whichever.
Little pouch things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Those are things that are spectacular. I know for the food pantry, which is kind of like a little grocery store, they can go through get things. I know it's been discussed. Peanut butter is something that is always a good donation because if it freezes, it doesn't hurt it. If it's hot outside, it doesn't hurt it. Peanut butter, and it's a good source of protein. However, with our checkout evaluation, a lot of the individuals that participated in the event, they said that the small individual peanut butters work really well because they're not quite so heavy as a jug of peanut butter. And the tuna that comes in the zip bags instead of the cans, those were really appreciated mm-hmm. by individuals because you didn't have to, you can Ziploc it and it's light and it's much easier to carry in a backpack. Because quite often when you're living homeless, your everything is in your backpack. And when you leave camp that day, you take everything with you.
Oh, sure. You wouldn't want a Costco-sized jar of peanut butter in there.
It might be a little heavy.
Yeah. You know, one of the folks I interviewed, one of the vendors there last year was, I think she was in junior high. And she had like a lemonade stand by the front door and was handing out socks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And socks that she collected in the community.
Yeah. I believe the hospital did a sock collection also. I think we have socks and we will be able to provide individuals with multiple pairs of socks this year, which is really important, especially this time of the year when it's so cold.
You know, there's nothing like a warm pair of socks.
That's right.
Yeah. How many vendors do we have this year? There were 40 last year.
Confirmed as of yesterday, 36.
Oh, okay. Are there... others expected that you would like to see?
Yes, we have a few that are not confirmed yet, but we expect that they will.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I know that some folks have issues with when they're homeless or experiencing homelessness, perhaps more in a long term and tied with economic factors, is banking. You know, so much today is, you know, with a debit card or something, or, you know, you need a bank or to have a bank, you need a post office box. You know, there's all these requirements for services and stuff that, where am I going with this? That it's sometimes are difficult to achieve when one is experiencing homelessness.
Absolutely. Well, if you don't have an address, now it's going to be even more difficult to even get an ID because with the new ID regulations, you need to have, what, two pieces of mail mm-hmm. from the same address? And so...
And I believe it has to be physical, doesn't it? It has to be a physical address. I think it does. It cannot be a P.O. box.
Wow, I don't get my mail.
I'm actually not sure. But either way, if you're an individual that is experiencing homelessness, so you don't necessarily have an address or even a P.O. box. And so then... how do you even begin to address all these foundational base needs without so much as an ID?
I think that was a question I was trying to ask. How did they do that?
Well, those that receive Social Security, SSDI, or SSI, if they don't have a bank account, Social Security actually has a Express Direct, I think is what their card is called, and the monies just go right onto that card. I know to have a bank account, you actually have to have a physical address, because there was a gentleman that experiences homelessness that I helped with his Social Security and getting everything lined up and helping him make those phone calls. And he tried to go to the bank to open an account, and they said he needed a physical address. So he went ahead and went with the Express Direct. I know if people are receiving public assistance for finances of any kind, they also have the Quest card that they are able to put the money on. So if they're unable to get services through a bank, there are other avenues in order to get the funds from those different...
from those public service agencies. But if you're hoping to find employment, you have to have ID. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to fill out that paperwork. Our agency, obviously, our clients are able to use our address to get their correspondence and list it for the duration of their stay. So we have that in our favor. But, finding someplace that they can claim can be really important. I think Love Inc. Has allowed people in the past to use their address for correspondence as well, to get important paperwork and things before the internet was quite as evolved as it is now. A lot of things you can do online, where before you used to have to get forms mailed and to you and that kind of thing.
Oh. Let me give the phone number again, 283-8414. You can give us a shout if you have questions about homelessness or the local remedies thereof, or the Project Homeless Connect, which is probably the biggest remedy at this point that I know of. Before we took a break a little while ago, I was going to ask about, you had mentioned, Ashley, about the tent camps and stuff. Do you find a lot of people living in their cars? Because I'd lived in my van one summer in Seattle.
In the summers in particular, yes, we find a lot of people living in their cars. The Lee Shore Center is located right next to the beach, so it is very popular in the summer in particular for people to go ahead and stay at the beach for as long as possible. Not during DipNet because there's fees, but pretty much the rest of the summer you can usually find cars there that move every so often to not violate the codes, but otherwise people are inhabiting those spaces.
Oh, wow.
That's the closest to us.
Uh-huh. I'm just, I think about road trips I've taken and all the RVs I've seen parked in front of Walmarts across the country. Is there a mobile population of folks who are, more traditionally homeless, who aren't, driven from their home by violence, that sort of thing. But, people who just, they don't have a place. They have nothing. Is there much of that? Is it worthwhile at all to try to dissect the different kinds of homelessness or levels, or is it better to just talk about it as just one thing?
Well, I can tell you from last year that the majority of the people who went to Project Homeless Connect had lost their homes due to loss of job. That was 23%, and it was the highest occurrence for those folks. Everything else was fairly significantly smaller. Work hours cut 1%, utility or rent increase 4%, illness injury 10%, which is one of the more higher.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things that are the primary cause in this area for that group that was with us last year. Again, if you have a mobile home, I don't know if someone would necessarily connect themselves with being homeless, because it is a physical structure, mm-hmm. even if it's not one that is considered an actual home to, for HUD guidelines or how we would think of something as stable housing. So I'm not quite sure about that population.
I know individuals that are living on a friend's couch or just staying in their room, an extra room that they have, they don't realize that that's actually considered homelessness, because it's not their home to go to. They're there for a temporary amount of time. Then I talk with a lot of people that's the situation that they're in. Unfortunately, once they hit this homelessness and experience that because of job loss or whatever the reason is, finding affordable housing after that is so very difficult, because it's not around, it's not available here so much. And if unfortunately they got evicted because of that job loss, now that's on their record, and it's the next renter may not take so likely to that. So that is a huge problem.
Wow.
It's getting reestablished.
Mm-hmm. I feel like pursuing this more, but I had another question that I wanted to get to before I forget it. When you talked about couch surfing,
mm-hmm.
Many years ago, I wrote a story about some teenagers here in town who went to high school, they went every day, but mm-hmm. they didn't live at home. They couch surfed. That was the first time I'd ever heard the phrase couch surf.
My understanding is the student population on the Kenai-Soldotna Peninsula that are considered homeless is quite large. I'm not sure what the numbers were. I do know, I think last year it was well over 100. And that's students. That's elementary, high school, junior high. It's all ages within the peninsula. And it's some of them may be living in the cars with mom and dad or camping out with mom and dad, or they are sofa surfing because the family has hit hard times or whatever the situation may be.
Yeah, I about 100 or so was the number I heard 15 years ago when I did that story. And it's especially distressing, I think. I mean, kids out there, mm-hmm. it's below zero, for goodness sakes.
And we have Kelly King from Students in Transition is the organization within the school district that works with those kids. I want to say last year, at the end of the school year, the number was around 150 students that had been identified. So those are students that had been identified and that the school system was trying to work with. How many, in addition to that, that managed to stay under the radar, I don't know.
Maggie, you mentioned that this was all... the Homeless Connect event is all non-governmental driven. Being a cynical journalist, I'm cynical about politicians. So, have you had governments come to you now and say, "Hey, we want to get in on this thing. You guys got a great thing going there, and let's call it the, their name thing."
Well, it's not necessarily completely non-governmental driven because we do rely on HUD funding.
Oh, right.
So, but what I mean that it's community sponsored and that each community is responsible for putting the event together. And so, we do all the footwork for finding donors. We put the meetings together. We do all of the planning. We find the place for the event. Then we do all of the PR like we're doing now. We get all of the information spread. And all of the people, the vendors, are individuals from our community. And all of the individuals that are served are individuals from our community as well. So it's just this community-building event that happens to be HUD-funded.
Mm-hmm.
Partially HUD-funded. We do accept additional donations.
Oh, okay.
So we've gotten money from, the Central Peninsula Health Foundation, I think some of the.
I don't have a list of donors, but we do get community donations as well, financially.
Yes. Let's see. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Alaska Mental Health Trust, Central Peninsula Hospital, ConocoPhillips, City of Kenai did do a cash donation last year. GCI, Kelly Meyer, Kenai Peninsula Community Foundation, Kenai Peninsula Home Build Association, and the VFW Auxiliary Post 10046 are a few that did cash donations.
And the Duck Inn.
And the Duck Inn, yeah.
How much did it cost to put this gig on?
That is a Kathy question. The chair of our...
It ranges. Oh. A lot of what we spend the funding on is supplies for the homeless. Right? I know we have to rent the facility,
mm-hmm.
But most of what we put on is donated by the community. And so most of those resources go directly to the participants. They're to buy supplies needed for them, for like the bags when they leave, or typically we do gift cards when they complete the evaluation. They'll get a $5 gift card to Arby's or Subway or something of that nature so that they can have another hot meal later on as well. So that's where a good portion of the funding goes.
Mm-hmm.
And our budget is relatively small. I believe around $5,000.
Yeah.
This year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Really? You can do all this for $5,000?
With the amount of community input that we have.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know what you said about community building a second ago? I really felt that when I was in there last year, that it is community building.
It's powerful. It's really powerful. I would encourage anyone that is drawn to volunteer or is drawn to this issue at all to just come to the event and see.
Mm-hmm. Are there additional volunteer opportunities at this point, or have you got pretty much everything set for the January 23rd event?
At this point in time, according to our volunteer chair, we are pretty set with volunteers.
Ah, that's good to know. What else should I ask you folks? We've got about less than 10 minutes here. How many folks are involved in organizing this? There's three of you here. How many more are there?
Partner agencies include Reentry Coalition, Love Inc., Kenai Public Health, Independent Living Center, Lee Shore Center. I'm going to forget so many
there's
here.
There's dozens yes. of organizations. Kenaiti Indian Tribe, PCHS, Peninsula Community Health Services, if you're not acronym inclined. I was going to say there's easily like three dozen different agencies that come together to provide services at the day of the event. And at the meetings, there can be easily 10 to 25 different people from the various agencies attending any given meeting. Yesterday, we had a meeting and we had the food bank there. Kenaiti, Independent Living Center, Lee Shore, the hospital. And that was just a small sampling of the folks that go into this process.
How long has the planning been going on?
Year round.
Is it?
Yes, we have a continuum of care meeting at least once a month until we start to get into Project Homeless Connect time, and then we will do like two meetings a month, and right now we're at one meeting a week.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Do you folks ever get discouraged? I mean, I imagine when you're running up to this thing, this event, and all these people are coming forward, but, you know, it does. I don't think it's a problem that's ever going to be completely solved. Or, I don't know if I believe that, but, I mean, do you guys ever, you know, think we're blowing into the wind here?
Absolutely not, especially with the population
so
that
either.
We work with. Every time someone comes in is a chance to make an improvement. It's a chance to make things better, and it can often take multiple attempts. A good portion of the folks that attend Project Homeless Connect, for example, 26% have been homeless four or more times in their lifetime. So it can be a chronic issue. If you're not very stable to start with, it's very easy when you get back on your feet for you to fall down again. But every time that we are able to help them, that's another chance. And there are enough success stories out in the world of people that have gone forth and done really well and often come back to volunteer or contribute financially or in kind because it speaks to them, because they understand that we may never fully solve the problem of homelessness, but I know we can reduce it to a significant amount as long as we continue as a community to work together and to remember that these are our neighbors, our family, our friends, our loved ones, and that they are just as important as the rest of us, and make that commitment. If you can maintain that, then I think you keep that sense of hope always, because you're not going to make giant, huge strides. We're not going to end it tomorrow, but every little step is a step that means a major impact in a single person's life.
Amen, sister.
Yeah. Yep. That was very good. You know, my interest in helping the homeless and, I have tried in the past, I went to art school in Seattle when I was young, and I used to walk through Pike Place Market every day, twice a day. And there was a spot where there were usually three or four guys there, and, you know, they were panhandling. They had a little dish and, you know, the sign and stuff. And because I dress as I do, like a casual Alaskan, and even then, I got to talking with him, and well, I got to talking with him anyway. But dressed as I do, I kind of fit in. So one day, I sat there with him, and just talked to him and saw how people, how they were almost invisible. It was absolutely amazing how invisible it was. And so I started sneaking pictures of people going by. And, you know, I was talking to the fellows who were homeless there. And something you said struck me about the families. That's what made me think about this was, you know, I found out that these guys have been homeless for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, or off and on for that long. And that they, you know, they may have family in that town, but for some reason they're disconnected. And it just really, you know, as a young person from a village in Alaska going down to Seattle and seeing all this, you know, it really affected me. I was like, you know, you never see that when you're growing up in Dillingham. And so that's where my interest in this comes from. And I'm just so glad that you guys are here doing all this for the folks here.
Well, I think it can be maybe easy to judge sometimes. You were talking about the invisibility and you know, like people that don't understand and have never had the same experience can tend to look down on others as if they're lazy or as if they are choosing this or this is a choice that they've made. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. How is that overcome?
How is what overcome?
Oh, you know, the stigma of like, well, you know, they're there for their because of their own actions. And if they would just had a stronger will, they'd be.
Truth and just talking to people and sitting with individuals, like getting to know their story and getting to know other people that are different than you, that look different and have different experiences and really breaks through it's that judgment.
In this day and age, we have social media tools and radio and the ability to really get people's stories. And that's where a lot of this is going to come in, is sharing those kinds of stories so that people understand that it's not just, well, that person's just lazy and so they're homeless. It is very connected, and it's a series of very unfortunate events that usually occurs in someone's life for them to end up this way. Nobody ends up homeless or in need because everything went exactly the way they had planned. Those kinds of stories can be incredibly powerful in connecting and understanding that we are still a community that cares about each other and that these are still our neighbors and our friends.
Sure, and this is a complicated, complex issue. It's not something just so simple as I don't have anywhere to stay. I'm going to sleep in the snow tonight. There's individuals that are experiencing substance abuse and mental health issues and a whole comorbid, you know, slur of issues that it's just not simple at all.
And for all those folks that you say, you know, they just walk by and they're invisible, I think people believe that if I don't make eye contact with that individual, then it's not really there. And the community needs to understand it really is there. And like Ashley and Maggie said, it's not something necessarily that someone has chosen. It's been a many events that have led up to this point. And sometimes people just need that extra hand. And education and educating the community in the ways that we do is going to be, I think, the best way to battle homelessness.
Yeah, that there's something we can do about it. There is hope.
Was the hope raised here a few years ago when the Affordable Care Act was passed? Because I can't think of anything that might help homelessness more than universal health care, keeping people in their homes and keeping them healthy.
I think that more health care to more people is going to always be a good thing.
Well, especially when we're talking about instances of mental health, chronic health, and substance abuse, people's lives are going to be drastically improved if we can get them into treatment and we can get them stable and we can get them into to a place where they can maintain housing and be able to, you know, reintegrate back into the societal norms.
Right, and not losing their life savings, you know, because they, I don't know, had cancer or something.
Right. I think I saw a statistic the other day, nationwide 50% of Americans are one medical emergency away from homelessness.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, like with the Affordable Care Act, even with that, though, if the individual has cancer and where you said, you know, they don't have to go lose everything because they have cancer, unfortunately, our system is very broken And they do kind of have to lose everything to get that Affordable Care Act Medicaid. If you have X amount of dollars, you don't qualify.
Oh.
So unfortunately, with that system, and I have so many people that come in and that I deal with every single day, and it's sad because it is. It's one huge medical event that can just break an individual.
Yeah, whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to thank you all for coming in, Maggie Winston, Kelly Bartlemy. Did I get that right?
You got it.
Yes. And Ashley Blatchford.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you.
You bet. We were talking about the Project Homeless Connect. The 8th annual one is coming up in 2 weeks from today on January 23rd from 9 to 3 p.m. It's in the Soldotna Sports Center. There are free rides available. There's information on Facebook, or you can call any of the organizations that we spoke about here today to find out more information.
Yes, please. And if anybody would like to make donations, we accept them at the Independent Living Center on K Beach and at Love Inc. across the street on K Beach as well.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask where your office was on K Beach. Is it across from Love Inc.?
It's sort of. It's on Princeton. So in the building right by, so in the same building
fish
as Rural
and Game
Cap.
Building.
And then next to the Fish and Game building, yes.
That's an Alaskan reference everyone gets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're next door to the Fish and Game building. Our door is on the Fish and Game building side of our building.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for coming in. This has been the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jay Barrett.